This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Mean one, Andrew Reich. You really are a dick. You're as cuddly as Kamala and as mean as Scott and Rick. Andrew Reich, you're a great big prick.
Okay, I'm gonna have to thank Justin Rosero for that fine introduction as Vince McMahon, in which I am decried as a mean one. My favorite lyric on that one, a little low, but he said something about, you would think after Katrina you would be nicer to us all, not so much. So, a little low, but I'll take it. This is Andrew Reich at the Place to Be Nation.com, and I am one of your co-hosts for the NBA Team podcast. I am joined out in the upper outskirts of Finland. I'm joined by Adam Murray. How you doing, Adam?
Why are you waking me up? Don't you understand? I'm 9 hours ahead of you.
I know. Well, if you're 9 hours ahead of me, then you already recorded this podcast.
Hello from the future. Good evening from Sarisalka, Finland.
Is that what Finland people sound like in the future, or just Finland people in general?
Finnish people just sound like Swedish people, like, oh, how you doing? No, that's Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota, which is right from Sweden.
Have you ever watched that NBC show Welcome to Sweden?
No, I haven't seen it, but I heard good things about it.
Yeah, well, no one's heard good things about Finland, so that's why they don't have a show called Welcome to Finland.
That's because you're not, if you're a hockey fan, Finland's a wonderful place.
What's hockey? But
it's a sport. It's this thing called ice. If they play it in the winter, I know you don't know of it down in New Orleans, but up in the northern areas here, hockey is very big.
So I wanted to introduce everybody. Welcome to the NBA Team Podcast. We had a bit of a little awkward opening there, but I wanted to sandwich that in there because I just thought it was suggested by somebody else, but I just thought that thing was so funny. I just wanted to let people know how great of a person I am and how thoughtful everybody thinks of me at a Place to Be Nation.
I'm just going to interrupt you. That's the great thing about the Place to Be Nation is, you know, you could tell, like, Justin loves what he's doing to spend time out of his day to make that song and actually write the lyrics up for you. And passion. There's no substitution for passion.
I'm going to have to spoil it and tell you that Justin did not write any of the lyrics. Aaron George did. So there's actually two people that hate me, not one.
There's more than two. You're getting a third one here.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about a special, and this one's going to be called Medium Cool, which is, if anybody knows what name drop that is, that's an old-time 60s movie, Counterculture, that came out. But it's a little bit of a play on words, because we're going to be talking about the influence of the television genre and other platforms on NBA entertainment and NBA basketball as a whole. And we're just going to be kind of going through the gamut of the history of the television age and the National Basketball Association, some things that people don't really realize, and then some people will hearken to and immediately realize what we're talking about. I want to just start off with Adam, not necessarily talking about the NBA, but talking about television production in general, because I think Adam might have a little bit of expertise. I'm going to let him explain why.
I am the most hated guy in the world.
Just in Finland.
I am the guy who runs the commercials. So when they go to break, somebody has to be the one to put commercials on. That's me.
Which is the bread and butter of paying a TV station.
Yeah, but as the viewer at home, commercials, what the fuck? Why are there always commercials?
Where's my kangaroo? Where's my Australian kangaroo?
It's a very tiresome world of just sports production. It's a very long is not the a long day is just underestimation of everything.
So you stitch together the sports packages at your news station.
I used to, you know, we used to put in all the games for re-airs, edit them down for time, make sure all the commercials were good for air, put them in. Some tiny places you actually run the halftime yourself, and you know, you're acting as a producer and director and timing things out. And
yeah, and any, I mean, we have a lot, I mean, obviously this is a basketball podcast, but we do know that we do accept the fact that there's a lot of wrestling fans that listen to us that are from the Place to Be Nation. And anybody who watches any of those wrestling programs know how absolutely pivotal it is to get a timeout right. Because if a timeout is wrong and you get like a little bit extra seconds of this, or if a segue or an overture doesn't come in right, it just ruins your experience. Is that right?
Basically, yeah. Like, let's say, okay, the wrestling match is slowing down. He has him in his sleeper hold for now. Okay, you can take a 2-minute break. Okay, you're clear for 2.5 minutes. Uh-oh, this isn't good. They come back, oh, while you're in break, here's what happened. And, you know, you have to crew, you know, the replay guy has to cue his stuff up. The announcer stumbles, you know, he has to go recap things. And it just sets everybody off. And the same thing, like, you know. Yeah, you need to make money, but it's a very well-timed science, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's one that a lot of people have had to master over the years because of the increasing influence and need for multimedia purposes in all of these different expenditures, like NBA basketball. We just, you know, we obviously were just kind of talking about WWE, but I mean, obviously, everything that goes through network or cable or streaming nowadays, it's so pivotal to have that outlet in order to outreach your product. And I don't think anybody has really done it better as a worldwide brand than the National Basketball Association. Would you agree with that? Or would
the NBA has embraced technology. And just one quick thing about wrestling, which people don't, you know, wrestling fans don't seem to understand. Like, why are you going to break? It's the title match. This is what we want to see. You have to get a certain quota of commercials in certain areas. So you can't just say we're going to have 45 minutes of this commercial free, because you could have a sponsor that says we want to be in the last 15 minutes. We'll pay more. It's more of a high-profile spot, so you need to. You can't just with anything live. You can't just say, "Well, why go to commercial?" Because you've already. That's how you make money, is like you said, and unfortunately, that's just the world we live in now, where you have to sit through 2 minutes of commercials and La Femme Nikita promos before you get back to Monday Night Raw.
Silk stockings. I wanted to ask one. Actually, I wanted to add on, and then we'll get to the NBA, and we'll finish this with this. I wanted to ask one question because you're in the room when this happens. If a major live event goes either into extra time, and now the Super Bowl, this has never happened, go to overtime. What happens with the commercial breaks there? If there are or if a game draws out and you need more time, and you've run out of buy-ins.
They always have extra commercials. You always – basically, if you ever see a PSA for, like, cancer or reading or something, that means they ran out of commercials and they need to – the producers are like, okay, we need time. We need to extend it because you have to fill up – like, college basketball, let's just say. Mm-hmm. Nice 2-hour window. They are required to fill up to – if they go over 90 minutes, they have to
fill up – the tournament games always go long.
But any televised game, if it goes over 90 minutes, they have to go till 2 minutes before the hour. 1 minute and 58 seconds is a guaranteed package you are getting as a viewer. So if that game goes 140, that's like, why are they sitting at the game talking 20 minutes to every coach and every player possible? It's because they're required to fill the time. They always have extra breaks just in case. There's always, you know, with sales, it's just people just buying a batch, so... You know, hey, you wanna buy some commercials? If we air them, you will charge you. If you don't, we won't. Okay, I'll have some auxiliary commercials just in case. And that's why you have extra breaks usually. And so that's if it goes short. If it goes long, that's why usually the commercial inventory is already ended by then. Again, mm-hmm. I'll go to college basketball. It's second half, you know, first team timeout, under 16, under 12, under 8, under 4. And then the end of the game. So once they do that end-of-the-game break, if it goes to overtime, the second it's over, that's why they go, okay, here's the final score, 103-102, good
and
night.
And that's when you go to local ads and league-sponsored ads.
Well, yeah, the local ads you can't get away from because you're required to give, on cable, 2 minutes per hour to your local cable company to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to get those in every hour, so those are already built in. So if you're like, oh, we missed a local break, now you'll have every tiny little cable company calling you up saying, why didn't we get this break in? We sold spots on our end. Mm-hmm. You're now costing us money because, you know. That, but really gets to the point where you're blowing through so many breaks, you're that far behind.
Yeah. So NBA, just to get back to that, as a worldwide entity, do you think they've embraced that better than most of the other American sports franchises or sports leagues?
It's not hard to. It was easy for them because what do people want to see? They don't want to see the two-hour game. You want to see that LeBron dunk for 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put that on the YouTube. Oh, here's a five-second LeBron dunk. Oh, people see that. Oh, LeBron, NBA, basketball, that name is out there. The identity is out there. The problem right now with hockey and, like, baseball is just all the players are interchangeable. No, there's no stars who are there anymore.
Yeah, it's a different business model, you know.
It's a different business model, but NBA relies on the highlights and the clips to make the player as opposed to, you know, look at every, you know, again, Tim Duncan, he's not a highlight player, so everyone's like, well,
To make a highlight reel of saying, hey, look how good the Chicago Blackhawks are, you know?
Yeah, because, well, here's a random Finnish name who I can't pronounce, and here's a random Swedish player I can't pronounce. And as opposed to, like, you know, look back a couple years ago, Gerald Green was probably more popular than half the guys in the NBA because he blew out a candle on the backboard.
On a cupcake.
Yeah, he blew out a candle on a cupcake, and all of a sudden, bam, he's a household name. Well, who's Gerald Green? Oh, he fucking sucks. He can't do anything. But at that point, he couldn't. Thankfully, you know, he's a nice story because he learned how to play, and now he's given good minutes to Phoenix until he gets traded.
You know, but we're gonna hold that thought about the digital stuff, but I do want to bring forth that thought that you had about star players and brand as a form of brand identity, because you know you had that talk of the trade that you talk about, timeout, commercial break, buy-ins, minute 58, and the pioneer of that, one of the pioneers of that, obviously with sports programming, was Rune Ulrich, who was the president of television for sports at ABC Sports for a very long time. He was he was one of the harbingers of Wide World of Sports. ABC Sports was probably on top. Would you say that ABC Sports was like the pioneer of sports programming in the 50s, 60s, and 70s?
Well, of course they were, because NBC wanted the marquee stuff. I might have my timeline wrong, but NBC was, we want the Olympics, we want Wimbledon.
Horse racing.
ABC's Wild World of Sports is, let's show cliff diving. Let's show barrel jumping for an hour. Let's show all these obscure worldly sports. And, you know, the NBA was entertaining due to its, no other sport is paced as the NBA is.
Yes, and now let's also get out of the way, because people will look at the Wide World of Sports and say, oh, well, that was like a packaged version or a microcosm of what ESPN was. ESPN was not a creation of Capital Cities or ABC. It was its own entity. ABC bought it out much later in the 1990s.
Yeah, ABC, that's the consolidation of the 90s as we could get this sports program.
ESPN. They became one in the same decades later.
You know, and ESPN didn't even know if people would buy into it. And even ESPN, you know, think back, you know, ESPN2 only started in like, what, 91, 92?
94. Because we were just talking about, you know, obviously, you know, the advent of ESPN2 has been in the news because of, unfortunately, the passing of Stuart Scott, rest in peace. But he was one of the major, he was like the first main anchor on ESPN2, and I think that was in 1993.
Yeah, so ESPN2 started probably 92 in a test run, and then 93 big time. So, you know, before then, it was just one channel, and then, you know, they always go back to the highlights of just how boring it was, because, you know, they used to have just the same ESPN Sports Center rebroadcast from, like, midnight to noon because there was nothing on.
Yeah. So we're talking about ABC Sports because the original main television partner for the NBA way back in the 60s and in the early 1970s was ABC. That was from 1965 to 1973. I'm going to tell you the truth. The only game I've really seen that was on the ABC banner way back when was, and you'll probably be familiar with this one, the Game 7 in 1969 Finals, Bill Russell's last game when Russell coached the Celtics and they played the Lakers in Los Angeles and beat them. Do you remember any of that production for ABC when the NBA was there? I mean, we're talking way long ago.
I don't remember, but again, it's all just NBA TV highlights of that, I've had to do over the years. And just on a random side note, it's funny how many people forget that Bill Russell actually was a player coach.
Mm-hmm.
At the time. Like, that was unheard of, people just forget really how good he was.
I believe he was the first black coach.
Yep.
In professional sports.
First African-American coach in sports, and people forget how good he really was. It was just all, Wilt was flashy and, had the personality, but Bill Russell was damn good.
Now, advertising was a little misguided, obviously, in the mid to early 1960s. People still thought smoking wouldn't kill you. But do you think that business model that we were talking about, star players, now highlight reels, there was no ESPN. There were obviously the evening news in which you would watch, who won the game, but it was really box scores. It wasn't clips of this guy making this play and this doing another play. So there was no highlight package. There was no highlight reel ADD society that was prevalent in sports yet. So do you think that idea of having a star player or a star attraction, do you think that was still a prevalent system when you promoted these sports telecasts?
No, that didn't happen until the 80s because back then, don't forget, people didn't make tens of millions of dollars or even $1 million. They just were, they were paid hardly nothing. And they all worked like summer jobs because it was, I'm a fan of the Celtics, not I'm a fan of LeBron. They're Bill Russell or Tommy Heinsohn or Bob Cousy or Havlicek. No, you were the fan of the team regardless of who they had. The players were just the players.
Yeah, they had Wide World of Sports, and obviously the Olympics was...
Yeah, there was Sports Olympics, but there was no, you have to, even the 70s, tune in for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and
NBA
tonight.
College basketball didn't get a contract until, the mid-70s. And most of the games were on tape delay.
Yeah, they were just all like, oh, we need to fill time up. Let's show this.
Yeah. So they got out, they had an 8-year contract with ABC. Here's a fun stat. Their first contract with ABC, $39,000. That wouldn't even buy you a Buick.
Buicks are overpriced and overrated. Name me a shittier car than a Buick. I'm going to pay $40,000 for a Buick.
Tiger Woods is very offended by all those things you just said.
What has he done in the past 10 years?
I'm talking about overrated people.
That contract was more of just like, okay, we'll just give you the exposure. We'll help your brand. It's basically what cable companies are sort of doing now. Like, you look at Comedy Central, not even related to sports. Okay, comedian, we're not going to pay you, but we'll give you the airtime to get your name out. We're not going to give you a huge TV contract, NBA, but we'll let you show your product.
Yeah, basically.
We'll let you go. NFL is always NFL is the American moneymaker. Yeah, other than that, it's
the rights fees is not where the money is. The window is where the money is. Mm-hmm. So it was just getting your name out there, which was so important. I mean, obviously, we're getting this back to wrestling over and over again, but just to help out, the people who, are wrestling fans that listen to it. Vince McMahon, with WrestleMania, was it big to get the money to get the gate in the Madison Square Garden? I guess, but they sold out Madison Square Garden a million times. They did it 100 times before that with Bruno Sammartino. They did it 100 times more with Hulk Hogan. So it wasn't the most important thing to just get rake in all this money. It was that opportunity to get as many eyeballs on you as possible. And if you had to pay out more money to get pay-per-view market in order to have people watch your show, then that was the publicity right there.
You need to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. You're not going to start off getting a $100 million contract. Just, again, with wrestling, you're going to have to start on that public access station or that, 3 a.m. on the local Fox affiliate. Then you'll move up to, like, one of the, you know, Smoky Mountain or Jeff Jarrett's league back in the 90s.
USWA,
then
you, yeah.
Yeah, and you move up to there. You move to the next one, the next one. You're not going to start off being getting WWF money. So the NBA at the smart time is like, let's just get ourselves on TV. People watch the product. Where do we make our money right now? People coming to the arena. They, you know, as you know, I go to a lot of Celtics games. The Celtics don't make any money from me sitting at home watching on TV. They need me to pay $100 for my seat to get in and watch them be god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
So back then, you know, check out, you know, you need – here's wrestling. You know, we're coming to your town back in March. You know, in March we're going to be there. You want to come see us. Oh, man, I do want to see them because I see them on TV. It doesn't matter. They're not making money off the TV. They need you to spend your money – being in the front row, paying however much for your seat, buying a $30 shirt, you know, getting all the merchandise, becoming an active participant in their brand.
Yes. Now, we're in chronology-wise, oh, I fucked up that word bad. We're still right in the early 70s. Syndication market was there. You know, but it was not – it was very, very, very raw. Like you were talking about the wrestling territories. Yeah, you could see those on local markets every now and then. There were some cable channels. HBO started in the mid-1970s. ESPN, everybody infamously knows, it started in 1979. But we're still at that early 70s mark. And in 1973, they signed a deal with CBS. And it was actually – it began at $9 million a year at 1974. Seems incredibly low, but given that market share at that time and the fact that they had 39 grand 8 years before that, that's quite the increase. Now CBS, they had — people forget about this one because people are so in such remembrance of NBC and the current product, but they had a very long 17-year relationship with CBS. Is that your bread and butter, Adam? Any memories of CBS?
What years were this?
1973 until 1990. So the magic, like the peak of the Magic Bird era, was CBS, NBA on CBS.
I would obviously remember that because, unfortunately, we're really old. Like, it's really sad how it comes to this, but, like, we remember the days where there was no cable and you had to, like, only had, like, 10 channels to choose from and that was it, and you had to turn the TV to get the channels. Like, I remember my dad had one of those, and, like, the cable box was, like, something new. It was like, what is this? And I don't really remember much of CBS. I remember much more of the – also in the late 70s was really
– what was your very first television memory of NBA basketball?
I remember the Celtics winning that championship – with what's his name waving the towel?
Oh, Larry Bird.
No,
what's his name?
Why am I having blanking on his name? The one played for Portland, tore his knee, came back for the Celtics for a year.
Yeah, Bill Walton. Bill Walton. No, the guy that was twirling the towel was Bird. You remember that when he did the whip?
Oh, wait. When Dennis
but no, Walton wore a towel too. That was — I think you're talking about Bird stole the ball.
No, I am just all over the place with but no, I remember like early, like the mid 80s Celtics. I vaguely remember that. I didn't start, you know, getting into the Birdie, but I remember them being on local TV. It was
so obviously you were very, very young when this was going on.
Yeah, I was with an 4 or 5 at the time. That was just, you know, it was just like, oh, sports, I like this. Oh, these guys are good. Everybody's cheering. They're our team? Oh, okay. Now, I know nothing.
CBS had unique presentations for theirs, a little bit more than ABC. ABC was very straight and narrow. If you watch any of those old classic games in the late 60s and early 70s when ABC had the contract, it was very, very straight and narrow. There really was no funny business. CBS sort of kind of glammed it up just a little bit. They were, I mean, you know, they're still a traditionally laden network. They always were and always will be. But they did a few different things. Like, I remember it for halftime, they had horse competitions. tournaments and slam dunk contests. They would do instant replay for slam dunks. Because remember, too, at the time, Adam, the ABA was huge. Now, the ABA was at a huge disadvantage because the NBA had blackballed them out of getting any television contract to compete against them. So if you wanted to watch ABA teams and ABA players like Julius Erving and David Thompson, you basically had to go, you either had to watch them on a local market or you had to go watch them in the game where there were like 13 or 14 fucking people there because the NBA was trying to buy your ticket. So, you know, the thing is, in the NBA, they were glamorizing the style of play. Now, they had star players in the NBA, you know, at the time in the 70s and then going into the early 80s, but the NBA was in a bad place.
The NBA, I'll put it, in the late 70s?
Yeah.
They were sort of moving themselves over. I think they sort of realized they can't be the big time because late 70s, it was the birth of the regional sports network.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sports Channel was, like, one of the first ones to come out. It's now, like, the first one, I think, I was, like, 1977, I was told. You know, my uncle used to tell me was, now became MSG, was Sports Channel New York, and then Sports Channel Philly, let's show the 76ers.
The one in LA that has now basically become the Los Angeles Sports Network.
Well, they all have, like, LA has, like, five of them. Boston, it was Prism, and, you know, they used to have, it was always, that's where all the Celtics games were, and, you know, you'd have my local, you know, I know WSBK had the away games, or some, they have some, and they had games in the 80s, and it was just, they knew they weren't.
WCBS did the Hawks games.
Yeah, to get into the big time costs more money. So if you start partnering with these little tiny niche networks, knowing cable's sort of the future, why try to compete with the NFL and get all that money and then just sort of cut your costs down and start with this, you know, new cable TV?
Yeah, and that's actually a good segue because that's when cable TV became a part of the NBA. It was actually for of all the networks, it was not Turner because they weren't really around. WTBS was around, but like we just mentioned, they were locally owned by Turner and they would run Atlanta Hawks games. The first cable network that got their foot in the door on the NBA was, and wrestling fans will know this one, the USA Network. They got in there in 1979. They were actually the exclusive broadcasters for the NBA draft when they first began to televise those in the 80s. Do you remember anything about the NBA on USA?
No,
I don't. That was a blur to me. I didn't even know that until I remember watching an old clip of the 1984 draft, the epic draft with Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon and Sam Bowie. That was on the USA Network with David Stern and his mustache. So,
yeah.
So, you know, there's a few memories of that. I don't remember if they had any playoff games. The other thing about the late 70s and early 80s, along with, you know, the bad image because of the drug problems that a lot of the players had, their issue with grooming new stars and replacement of guys like Russell and Chamberlain who retired. But the other thing I remembered is that they had a lot of tape delays at that time because of the fact that they had trouble. They were having trouble making their programming, their games, even their NBA Finals games, a priority in the month of May, back when the Finals was in May, the playoffs was in April. And they were having trouble getting CBS to broadcast those games locally over their May sweep game finales, like shows like Dallas or Golden Girls, which is NBC, so that's a bad point. But you know what I'm saying.
That's the thing is, yeah, you're going against higher competition. To put anything live on TV, that is super expensive to rent satellite time and to get all the equipment and the trucks to broadcast, especially way back then.
Yeah, and like you said, it was a reality check for the NBA in a little ways because, you know, for the Super Bowl, yeah, you have to make an exception because that was a television event. The Oscars is a television event. The Olympics is a television event, winter and summer. They still are. The NBA at that time was not. And even though we as basketball fans have great memories of things like Blazer Mania in 1977 with Bill Walton and all that, and the triple overtime game with the Celtics and the Suns, Gar Hur, turned around, shot in the air, it's good. Great stuff. And Magic Johnson scoring 42 points in replacement of Kareem and winning a title. almost all those games were on tape delay on regional markets.
Well, yeah, it's just, again, due to the expense of it. Look at the NFL. Even then, like, why are, like, so many people, Steelers, Cowboys, you know, only just a handful of teams? Because those, they were the only ones who were played on Sunday because they were the big games. Mm-hmm. You would never see the Patriots or the Saints on regional TV. Because back then, you could only choose, like, okay, we're going to send all our people to this one game, mm-hmm. not we're going to show everything.
America's game of the week.
Yeah, so you have NBA with, you know, 80 games for the season. Well, we're not going to go out do 80, you know, go out do a game every day. No, we might do a game a week. Oh, you're going to tape it for us and just mail us the tapes and we'll air it? Okay, no problem. It's a lot cheaper.
What about the announcing? Now, in the 70s, it was Brent Musburger. He would do it with Rick Barry sometimes, and they also had Dick Stockton in the 80s during the Magic Bird era. Now, when Magic and Bird ascended, when Michael Jordan became a global superstar in Chicago, that was right in the mid to late 80s, and CBS was signing like 2 to 4 year contracts every year with the NBA as their rights fees would exponentially grow for every signing period, but they weren't committing to like a 6 year mega contract that the NBA really wanted. So, you know, the CBS was kind of buying low for short term, but they were getting great dividends out of it because that was right when the NBA was in its maximum growth, when Bird and Magic were rivaling with the Lakers and the Celtics, and then the Pistons with the Bad Boys, and Michael with the Chicago Bulls. It just seemed like perfect timing.
Yeah, that's one of those things where you get these rare once-in-a-generation talents come in, and that just helps your brand.
Yeah, and if you look at those audience numbers for, like, the 88 finals, the 84 finals, which was the first time the Lakers and Celtics played, the Celtics won in 7 games. Record audiences. And now, all of a sudden, the NBA was in the catbird seat on the programming. They weren't the ones begging the networks to run their stuff. The networks were begging them to run their stuff. So now they didn't have to worry about fidgeting around their programming in the months of June and have to play one night after the next in the NBA Finals like they did in the 70s in order to avoid tape delays. Now, you didn't have to worry about that stuff. The last time they did tape delays on CBS was 1986. It was the Western Conference Finals with the Rockets and the Lakers. I think it was Game 3. And then after that, they were able to get their live programming, which became more and more vital to networks as the ratings for their regular dramas and sitcoms started to falter. But that came so much more later. That didn't really happen until the new millennium, you know?
Well, you know, also in the 80s, then you started getting people who were, you know, more people were buying cable. Now just cable's an afterthought.
Yeah, now cable, we were talking about USA Network. The other one who got in there for a little while at the same time was ESPN. They had a contract from 1982 for 2 seasons, the 82-83 season, the 83-84 season. Don't remember too much about that. You'll see a few highlights of it every now and then. Dick Vitale was a studio analyst. I remember they did an Eastern Conference Finals game between the Celtics and the Bucks. I really don't have any memory of the NBA on ESPN before that. I do know this. Did you notice, though, that when ESPN did not have a TV contract or any TV tie-ins to the NBA, that they kind of treated it as a secondary sport?
No.
You don't think so at all?
No way. Like, they like, look at, like, hockey now. You think they broadcast any hockey on ESPN because they have no contracts?
Not now. No. Not now, but remember NBA, in the early 90s.
ESPN loves everybody.
Remember in the early 90s, though, the NHL had money tied in the Stanley Cup with ESPN, and they would prioritize that programming.
Yeah, but ESPN's the same thing. Well, you're not on us. Screw you. We're just going to show things that we have and only things we have, pretty much.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, that's a good point, you know. I mean, because the fact that when Magic and Larry and Michael became household names, it wasn't – they bought in – David Stern, when he took over in 84 and replaced Larry O'Brien, he took the business model on that was not there in the 60s and 70s that we had discussed. And it really rescued them when it came to their brand identity, and that was – the stars make the league. The teams.
The stars.
It's not the teams. It's not the style of play. It's not the coaches. It's not the legacy of the league. It's the stars. You know, the only downfall of that is that stars at the end of the day are human beings too, and human beings can't play forever.
Yep, and that's why you need to start developing new stars, as we had mentioned with golf. What's golf's problem now? They put all their eggs in the Tiger basket.
That overrated Tiger Woods.
All of a sudden, he's gone for whatever personal reasons, or he seems to be always injured now, but
he's on the
they call. Have nobody, there's no stars. Problem with hockey is a team sport with players who all have no personality.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no stars, there's no Gretzky's and Hulls and, you know, Ray Borks and just people, Mark Messier. There's just, NBA always had stars. Baseball used to have stars.
Yeah, and one of my favorite, I don't know if you've ever remember this one, but do you remember the Converse commercial where they would do the rap? And they had Magic, and they had Larry, and it was just so cool because it wasn't about, hey, look at this guy that plays for the New York Knicks that wears a Converse. It wasn't about that. It was like, hey, look, it's Bernard King, and he wears Converse. Larry Bird wears Converse. Magic wears Converse. Isaiah Thomas wears Converse. And it was like, it was a really funny commercial where they did a rap song, and they would all hand off the Converse shoe. One of the other guys was Mark McGuire. I liked his part because he was such a bad rapper. But, but the point of it is that, you know, it wasn't about team identity, even though for the local markets that was important because it drove ticket sales. But at the end of the day, it was about, you know, having to base it down to a very fundamental purpose, like Magic versus Michael, Michael versus Larry, Isaiah versus Mike Magic, you know?
This you might not like this, but is this the start of the end of your rivalries? Where it's no longer Lakers versus Celtics. It's now Magic versus Bird. It's Michael versus, you know, Magic.
Well, it hurts rivalries in that player movement is so fluid, even among the top stars, that say, like, you know, we talk about Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard has played for three different teams in the last 4 years. So say it's like – they try to build up a rivalry now, you know, before we go backwards and talk. It's like LeBron versus Dwight. Well, in 2009, 2010, that was Cleveland versus Orlando. Well, now it's Houston versus Houston versus Cleveland. Last year was Houston versus Miami. So you can't – you know, there's such a buddy system now in the NBA. And we've talked about this so many times that rivalries have saturated because there's no hatred. There's no buildup. You know, any wrestling fan will totally understand what I mean by that. And so there's no extenuating circumstances of this guy trying to build his team here and stay there, and then another guy at another team builds his team and stays there like Malone and Stockton did, and then they converge and have a battle, you know. And so there's not that strict loyalty to a team like, okay, I have to be for this team because Michael Jordan plays there. Now it's like, okay, I'm going to stick with this team because this guy plays there, and if he leaves, I'll be a bandwagon fan and join that team. You know.
Well, yeah, but again,
you become a national fan.
Did that start because of this? Now let's market the player as opposed to the team. Like everybody, you know, back in school had Jordan jerseys. They couldn't name one other player who played with them. It's like, oh, I like Michael Jordan. Well, who else plays the most? Michael Jordan. Okay, I got you.
I would bet even by the time we got to the Dream Team, people still didn't know who Scottie Pippen was. Yeah, no offense to the guy, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, that was just a marketing, let's get players. And now, you know, every team needs a marquee player in order to be relevant.
So we talked about CBS. They had a very long relationship, 17 to 16 years there. And then David Stern, being ever the sneaky businessman that he is, and he's one of the smart ones. I think he was the true pioneer in terms of being the league commissioner, because he was not scared to go for the jugular from a business perspective. And he went for the jugular here because in 1990, he decided to ditch CBS because he wanted a big money contract from a network. And he committed, and he got a four-year contract with NBC. And that contract bumped up his broadcast rights from $43 million in the 1990 season to $150 million. That's triple. That's more than triple.
But again, it was, you know, basketball was still rising.
Mm-hmm.
They had grown. They had the names. They had, you know, also with NBC is they developed shows with it.
Well, NBC was on top of the world in terms of their fictional program ratings. You know, they had must-see Thursdays, and they had, you know, it's starting to escape me, but I think they still had coverage of the Academy Awards at the time. And, they you know, the Super Bowl, they still had NFL in their pocket at the time. So, and the Olympic coverage, obviously. So they had a lot of things going their way. Dick Ebersol, another pioneer, just like Rune Ulrich was, he was a guy that was able to funnel that in and have that come to Jesus moment with David Stern and get him in the fold with NBC. And I'll tell you this about NBC. There was, maybe it's because this was my first memory in terms of NBA television. It was Magic and Michael in the 91 NBA finals. Not only was that perfect timing, because it was the two biggest stars in the league at the time going head to head in the championship, but It was also cool because didn't it feel like when NBC got the TV rights in 1990 that there was this vibrancy that was kind of missing on CBS?
Well, that was because of the John Tesh theme, right?
Rombaugh Rock. People don't realize sometimes it's John Tesh from Entertainment Tonight that did the piano rock song. You know, that's our nostalgia kicking in, but it wasn't just that it was a song. I mean, it was the fact that they really put NBC really bought in on NBA, really did. Like what you see now with Sunday Night Football in America, where you see all these megastar broadcasters, Bob Costas, Al Michaels, Dan Patrick, all these guys that put all of their investment into making the NFL package for them the biggest thing, that's what they did for the NBA in 1990. They would have Bob Costas as their studio analyst. You had Marv Albert. You had Mike Fratello. You had all of these new nifty graphics that would seem outdated now, but were kind of new school back then. You know?
You know why? Because NBC's coverage, I could be totally wrong with this, but I remember there were no games on NBC before Christmas. Christmas is when it started. That's what made Christmas so big, because now you're on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're on the big time. Now it's...
Well, again, NBC was the ratings king, and the NBA went with them. And not only that, they got a major payday in order to get NBC to pry them away from CBS. So they made them overbuy at the time.
They made them pay more than NBC also got. They got greedy. I remember they got NASCAR, and they got like they got too much.
Well, what they did is they convinced themselves that they could continue their dominance without the NFL.
They could handle everything.
And when the NFL left their contract in the late 90s and CBS took it, that was the beginning of the end for NBC Sports. But that came much later. We're still in the early part of the 90s. Now, they had a little Saturday morning show called Inside Stuff with, I think it was Hannah Storm and Ahmad Rashad, or was it Willow Bay? I can never remember.
All I remember is Ahmad Rashad. Doesn't matter who else it was.
You had any great memories of Inside? I loved Inside Stuff as a kid.
Oh, I used to watch that every week.
You know,
I don't remember one thing that was. All right, I just remember it was Ahmad Rashad. I'm like, oh, that's cartoons are over. Ahmad Rashad time.
Yeah, and then you had Pro Stars. Now, Pro Stars wasn't an NBA entertainment property. It was a cartoon that had Bo Jackson, Michael Jordan, and Wayne Gretzky. But the fact that you had Michael Jordan as this like superhero-like cartoon character, kind of on the level of like a Hulk Hogan or Super Mario or Darkwing Duck. That's a terrible name drop. But you get my point. This idea of, you know, man as superhero.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And, you know, you had Michael and Magic, and they face off. This was the season before Magic had to retire due to contracting HIV. So, I mean, what perfect timing. It's almost conspiratorial that the Lakers and the Bulls played in that first series.
But, you know, the funny thing about that time is, you think about those teams, how many teams really had superstars? It wasn't like you could get a lot of teams into the finals. It was just...
Well, because Michael was so greedy that he was winning them all.
Yeah, so...
But the intrigue of that was that the Pistons' empire had fallen, the Celtics and Lakers empires had. They were still playoff teams without Magic and Bird.
They were past their prime.
But they were past their prime. So the intrigue that came in that early part of that NBC deal in the beginning of the 1990s was, okay, Michael is the king of the world. Who can take him down? So yeah, then here comes Clyde Drexler. Nope. Bye-bye. Here comes Ewing. Nope. Bye-bye. Here comes Charles Barkley. Nope. Bye-bye. You know, and I think that was the fascinating part. It was basketball. It was sports as a narrative, you know, to create an epic out of something that you can't predict.
Yeah, but it just became a narrative of, you know, again, thankfully Jordan stayed healthy, and because there weren't many stars back then. It was just who can take Michael and the Bulls down. There was
the dream team on NBC with the Olympic coverage in Barcelona.
But if you look at that team, most of them were just sort of like ceremonial picks and past their prime.
Some, but you still had guys like Ewing, Barkley, David Robinson, Karl Malone, John Stockton.
Yeah, you had those, but...
But Michael can't play all those guys in a row. You know, you can only play one.
You can only play one, but, you know, think about it. If, let's say, Jordan went down, would people would the brand have grown if, you know, you had Malone and Stockton as your top guys?
Well, the answer is no, because that's what happened in 1994.
Yeah, but that was just 1 year.
Yeah, because he came back late in 95, so you're right.
One year they can handle it. And like I meant that parallel.
Yeah, but those ratings were terrible, and they got overbooked by they got overlapped by the O.J. Simpson car chase. That's how bad it got.
Yeah, because again, they put all their money into one player,
and
like I said, thankfully he stayed healthy. What would happen if he sort of crapped out or tore his ACL?
Then the late '90s would have been awful.
Yeah, he would have been done. Now it's just like, oh, you'll be back in 9 months.
Yeah,
six if you're lucky.
Because now we're getting to the later part of the 1990s. NBC still had a television contract with them the first few years of the new millennium. But this was really the last part of the bread and butter of the NBC contract when Michael came back. The Bulls dynasty continued with Rodman and Pippen and Phil Jackson. And the thing that was intriguing is that, like we just said, sports is a narrative. The idea of Is this the last run for the Bulls? When are the Bulls going to break up? Is the dynasty dead? Is anyone going to take them down before Michael retires as a Chicago Bull? And the more it intensified, the more people wanted to watch. You know, and it's always been like that. You know, one of the biggest programs in the history of television is Dallas when J.R. Ewing got shot. Well, the reason why everybody wanted to watch Who Shot J.R. is because you created this conflict of, oh my God, J.R. Ewing was shot. Who killed him? Well, everyone wants to see the payoff. You know, there's another wrestling term, payoff. And that's the thing that we are always waiting for in pro sports. And we don't always get it, Adam, because you can't just conspiratively put together two teams and play them against one another every time. And that's the payoff. And that's what we got in the late 90s with the Bulls. We got the payoff with them and the Jazz.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, but also with everything, hey, you could conspiratorize all you want, but it can still, you know, again, with wrestling, oh, you could book the match of the century.
Yes.
But if they fail to perform, yeah, nobody, you know, okay, Jordan hit that fadeaway jumper. It's like,
That's true. The stars might align, but then they might run into each other and make a giant fart noise, you know? And that's exactly. Not good for anybody. And let me tell you, some of those Jazz Bulls games, if you really watch them, they are ugly games.
Nothing special.
Yeah, they're great moments because of the fact that it's Michael, it's Carl, it's Rodman. You know, there's Malone and Rodman running into each other like a bunch of goofs. You know, and there's great stuff there, obviously. But at the end of the day, what's the quality of play? And the Bulls were masking so many problems that the NBA had with not only their image, but the fact that they just did not have, like you said, adequate replacements for their pillar stars that had built their brand beforehand. Who was going to carry that legacy? Who was going to be the guy that usurped Michael as the star? We didn't find that out until in 2000, right at the tail end of NBC's deal when Shaq and Kobe got together under Phil Jackson in L.A.
Yeah. I have no comeback for that.
Did you like Shaq and Kobe?
No.
You thought it was a little obnoxious?
As a Celtics fan, I cannot cheer for the Lakers. So it was just, you know, it was... I would have liked to see what he did if he had stayed at Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
What he would have done there. It's just...
Well, there's another payoff scenario where the Magic took out the Bulls in 95, and then the Bulls wanted revenge. So everybody was tuned in to watch the Bulls and the Magic. Now, it ended in a really merciless sweep, but people still tuned in to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. the other thing was, too, remember when Shaq and Kobe broke up in 2004, we're fast-forwarding a little bit, but if you look at the NBA finals that have been on ABC in the new millennium, the highest rated one is the Lakers-Pistons series. That series is awful, but people wanted to watch the train wreck.
Yeah, they you don't know what's going to be awful until it's too late. Mm-hmm. You don't go in going, this would be a terrible series. Why would we want to watch this? Oh, this is horrible.
Yeah, but if you hype it up and then it becomes a train wreck, it becomes even more fascinating.
Yeah, and then, well, that was the last game. This one could be better.
Yeah.
It's always different.
So we had NBC, and the problem, obviously, and everybody had predicted this, is that, you know, when Michael left, what was going to happen in the NBA? Well, the answer was really bad things, because the ratings absolutely dovetailed. The Spurs win over the Knicks, while still good compared to today's ratings because of network saturation, because of cable viewership, which was a big part of this equation, too. The network ratings were going way down, even with Shaq and Kobe in the fold, winning titles with the Lakers and three-peating in 2000, 2001, 2002. The ratings were still not very good. It was very prevalent on whether or not the series was close. Like the Lakers-Kings series in 2002, which is the last postseason in which the NBC had a contract with the NBA, that was a very, very close series, obviously, and the ratings were through the roof because people were fascinated as to who was going to win. But when you got to the Nets series where the Lakers easily swept New Jersey, nobody watched. It was one of the lowest-rated finals of all time.
Yeah, that was just, again, how, you know, the continuation of cable. And it's just like, oh, well, why we want to watch? They had developed, you know, I can only speak for myself, but it was just the point you develop stars so much. Yeah, I don't care about Kobe, so I'm not going to watch it just for the sake of watching a basketball game. My team's out, I'm done.
Yeah, and then David Stern, you know, ever the businessman, got greedy again, and he reached over to the other table, and he made a deal with ESPN and ABC, and their deal started in the 2002-2003 season. Their first rights fee went about five seasons, and that was at $767 million a year, which is a huge growth from the $150 million, obviously, that they got in 1990, so obviously the league growth from an economic standpoint was definitely there, but it did feel like... I'm going to tell you, Adam, it felt like something was definitely missing when they went to ESPN. Did you feel the same way?
They did, but at the same time, you have, you know, I wouldn't say that it was a cash grab. I'd say ABC paid for it. NBC was, well, we have Wimbledon. We have the Kentucky Derby. We have the Olympics. Do we really need to spend another $1 billion on this? And ABC was just like, okay, we'll pay for it.
Well, ESPN was
they paid.
Oh, go ahead.
They paid the price. It wasn't like it was a bargain. The same because you go for future ratings, and every time it goes up, you don't pay for the year now. You're paying for 10 years down the line where it will be a bargain because prices always go up by then.
Now, ABC was the exclusive home of the NBA Finals. They played all the available games for the finals on ABC, including Sunday night games, which had become severely limited. Here's the irony of it, is that if you look at the number of games that were broadcast on network television in the 60s, there's always this perception that we put out there that there were no games on network television back in the 60s and 70s. Well, no, there were. There were actually quite a few back in the 70s and the 60s and the 80s. It's actually now that network television barely runs pro sports, if you really look at it.
Yeah, because it's very... network TV cannot run pro sports like a regular season thing due to its high cost. And then, like, you know, okay, for example, it's, you know, they say it takes like a million or two to do an episode of whatever, a TV show, but then you can air that over and over and over. You air one NBA game, get the satellite time, get the insurance, every all the prices to get half the viewers, because you're only going to get NBA viewers. You're not going to get a crossover market. The era of expansion and getting new viewers in any sport really sort of died in the 90s when all the cable channels started forming and all the sports teams went to their own cable. They all disbanded from broadcast TV to go to cable. Every team has a cable, their own cable channel now. Name me a sports team that doesn't have one, and hasn't had one for years.
Yeah, and then we talked about in 1984, their ESPN deal ended, as did their USA Network deal. Now, the first Turner cable deal that they signed was actually with TBS, when Turner bought out TBS in the early 1980s. This was even before WCW World Championship Wrestling was a thing. So, I mean, they were already in the door for TBS as one of their mainstays, one of their go-to programming, and then morphed and then became TNT in 1988. People are obviously familiar with TNT because they were the home of WCW Monday Nitro, but they were very, very big on their NBA basketball, and they cherished it.
They did. It was just, you know, it was a very, I wouldn't say it was a weird match, because TNT never had anything sports related other than the NBA.
Yeah, it was still weird. They had like Monster Vision reruns of Dallas, and
they still don't. Now it's just all Law and Order and
yeah,
the NBA.
We know drama was one of their old line taglines, you know? It's like, we know drama, but we also have a lot of sports, you know?
Yeah.
You know, now TBS, obviously, they had their contract with them for a long time as a sister network to TNT, and their contract ran out in 2002 when they signed the new TV deal with ESPN and TNT. But TNT was really the base, and I feel like even though maybe it's because of the program that they have with Ernie Johnson and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith inside the NBA, which has become like one of the great programs in sports today. But it feels to me like even though the big money is with ESPN and ABC, because that's where the network deal is, that's where the main advertisers, I feel like the home of the NBA is on TNT.
Yeah, because they have personality. ESPN, you just sort of know,
very,
all right, we've paid, you know, they've had a million channels. They just pay for everything. It has a very generic feel to it.
Yeah, and now, do you remember that early part when they had, like, Tom Tolbert and Tim Hardaway was a color analyst? I almost said Tim Hardaway Jr. I mean senior, the one that hates gay people. And I'm trying to remember some of the other guys. I remember they started out Greg Anthony right after he retired. Do you remember that? It was really, really rough and tumble when they first started that coverage.
I remember the ESPN. Then they used to do, like, Tuesday. They just used to do, like, Fast Break and just.
They still do. They call it Coast to Coast.
Yeah, but when they first started, it was just like, well, we're not going to show you a game. We're just going to talk for 2 hours and show, like, 5 minutes to.
Yes.
Each game.
Yeah, that was that's when they brought in Stephen A. Smith from Fox Sports, and they also and that's when they had that infamous line where he says Slava Medvedenko, because he played for the Lakers at the time. And I'm trying to remember some of the other kind of fresh faces that they had in there for the NBA coverage. Tom Tolbert just still keeps popping up in my head because he was so terrible. Bill Walton too. He went to ESPN when they migrated over there. Man, it just felt like even though ABC was kind of fresh because they hadn't been on that network in like over 30 years, it just didn't seem right. It seemed like something just didn't match.
It just seemed like, I don't know, it was just a cash grab.
Square peg, round hole.
ESPN was just, it didn't, there was no partnership. NBC cared about the NBA. TNT cares. ESPN is just like, we'll broadcast you.
ESPN cared, but they cared about the money that the NBA.
We'll show you the same graphics package as everything else. We're going to have the same look, the uniform feel of everything. And just sort of, yeah, I'm watching a college football game.
It became assimilated. It was part, you know, ESPN maybe in the 80s when ESPN, when they first had a contract with the NBA, ESPN was sort of the little guy. They were the guys that were trying to expand sports awareness to the consumer through cable television, and people applauded that. But by the time in 2003, the NBA joined ESPN, ESPN was the big boy in town. They were the bully on the block. If you wanted sports programming, you had to go through them. Without them, your consumer awareness was down.
Basically, that was the, you know, ESPN's like, well, we are the home of sports. If you go through us, we will show you. If you don't, you'll just be buried in obscurity.
Yeah, and so obviously, like I was trying to play off, when, you know, they had NBA Tonight on ESPN2 with Jason Jackson and, you know, the late Stuart Scott, and I remember Fred the Mad Dog Carter and guys like that. But I remember for sure when the NBA came into town with their programming on ESPN, that's when the big guns showed up. That's when they started to really amp up their promotional material to try to pump up the NBA finals, to try to pump up every type of program that the NBA was supplying them so that they can make the NBA feel like their investment paid off.
Yeah, but they just threw money at it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, let's just get bigger name people. Let's just get... It was just you're just one of many. You're just part of our lineup. You're part of our portfolio to sell to clientele.
Yeah, but we say that, but the fact that they went to $767 million a year from 2003 to 2008, well, when they re-signed an 8-year deal for $930 million, so they obviously felt like there was value there because they increased their rights fees to the negotiations because they really didn't want the NBA to leave. So they must have valued it in some way. I just wish, Adam, it showed on the production side.
Oh, that's, again, it's the same thing. It's just, well, we have our production, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. With, you know, as the later years go on and the more networks that start forming, it's more of a, well, we can't lose them to the next network. We don't want to grow the next – we don't want to make somebody else bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like I mentioned with hockey, people actually – the only reason people care of the NBC Sports Network is because of the NHL now, because they actually – you know, they outbid ESPN for these things, and other networks are starting to outbid ESPN currently. So back then it was like, well, we'll give you – you know, well, ESPN paid to move it to cable, and now people are now paying to get it off ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
So it's – you can only throw money at it for so long, which ESPN's like, well, we'll just give you your money, but you're in between all our other broadcasts. You're always going to be second fiddle to our, you know, Sunday night football, now Monday night football, and so on and so forth. You're just one of many, whereas, again, with the Hockey Network, you are our centerpiece. You are our jewel. We have two Stanley Cup games on our network.
Yeah, and the other reason why you could kind of estimate why they had more value that ESPN did for NBA coverage and why they wanted to keep it when it was available to sign a new deal is because cable as a whole has become so much more valuable in today's mainstream. It's not that dirty programming that you had to hold the rabbit ears to see. You know, now, like, cable, I mean, we could make this argument now because of the fact that The Walking Dead on AMC is, like, the top program by far in the country, is that cable has almost usurped network television, not only in quality of programming, but also in quantity, in terms of number of viewers.
Well, it's changed. People have – there's been a shift recently from – we have 24 episodes, we'll show you all year, as opposed to, no, we'll show you a 10-episode season, all back-to-back-to-back, one a week. But it's changed, but ESPN also had that ABC money, and we're like, well, our budget has gone up tremendously, let's get everything we possibly can.
Do you think we'll ever see the NBA Finals on either ESPN or TNT?
You mean it's not already?
No, it's on ABC.
I mean, you have every college playoff game that's not the Rose Bowl is on ESPN.
That's a recent development, and we'll talk about this very quick and jump off. But I found an interesting article when I was researching this that the ad sales on the upcoming national championship, which is on ESPN, the national title game has been on ESPN for college football since 2009, I believe. You know, after they left their deal with Fox. But what's different now, obviously, is that the BCS is gone and there's a college football playoff. The ratings for the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl were so high. They were like in the 28 million mark. They were so high that they actually undervalued their ad dollars. So the ad so they're overselling their ad dollars now for the title game between Oregon and Ohio State. Excuse me. And the new one is going to be in the range of like $4 million per spot, which is the same as the Super Bowl. So do you feel like the NBA will be able to up the ante as a cable program for their championship series and be able to sell that ad revenue for the same amount as if it was on network?
Well, the NBA has no say, and the NFL has no say of what they charge for anything. It's all – if ESPN says we want you to be on ESPN, the finals will be on ESPN. They just say we'll toss it on ABC because you're in June. There's no programming to go against it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now – what's the average NBA rating now? 16 like, million, 18
for the
million?
NBA, for the NBA finals, yeah, that's about right. In the if it gets to a seventh game – it would probably be in the mid 20s, maybe the early 20s.
Yeah, that's high, but don't forget, you know, think back, like, you know, now sort of things have since network's gone down, but back then you're putting NBA 12 million. Well, yeah, you used to have like Desperate Housewives would get like 20 million viewers,
mm-hmm.
which is a fraction of the cost to produce, and you could air that over and over and over. So, and it's also shorter and you can make more money by not, you know, you're competing against everything else.
And it's cheaper because it's studio made.
Yeah, so, you know, with sports, it's just people sort of expect it to be, it's going to go that way eventually. Like I had mentioned, the first two games of the Stanley Cup, again, this could have changed recently, but they used to be on NBC Sports Network. And back then it was Versus.
Mm-hmm.
That was a part of them going to
Which before that Versus. Was Outdoor Life Network.
Yeah, so you have these cable companies who are going to and people are tuning into them to, you know, everything else is on cable, so it's, you know, are you on ABC or are you on ESPN these days? Well, you're showing, well, but where are ESPN on ABC? It's like, oh, give me new fucking graphics. Don't show me the same package on two networks.
Let me ask you this, because that's a good one that you mentioned. If you watch the early ABC things, they would show the score like on a slow fade, like kind of on a card, and they would fade and they would bring it back. And then on CBS, they would show it probably after about every possession. NBC the same. NBC's graphic is the one that was immortalized on the video game NBA Jam. I wrote an article about that with Maurice Pogue, so if anybody wants to read that, go ahead. And then where did it change with the attention spans that we had to have either a ticker or a constant run of what the score is? And do you like it?
You just get used to it. It's sort of...
But do we need it as fans?
Kind of, because we've gotten used to it. I can't even say when they don't. The funny thing is, like, I used to work for a really, I'll say, just for lack of better terms, tiny network. And the ticker used to die, and the score bug used to die. So there'd be, like, 4 minutes straight where there'd be no score on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, what the hell? Like, what's the score? I don't know. We also did tape delay where there was no score on the screen. It's like, I'm lost. Who's winning? Who's, you know, I don't want to watch basketball.
Yeah, so as an editor, it was easier to trail.
You know, if it's not on, just, you know, the ticker with other scores is just because, well, what are my other teams doing? Who's this team doing? But you just get used to it. It's on. Even, I don't know, just as a viewer, even when I'm watching the game live, I am looking up to the scoreboard, like, almost after every possession to check the score.
Yeah.
Because you're just used to knowing every piece of information.
Yes.
Okay, you know, even though I know, oh, it was 80-78, they scored, so it's 82-78, I still have to look up.
Yeah.
Because it's constant, the information needs to be there. It's not invasive to the game, it's just, there it is. Yeah. How much time is left, what is it, it's just reference.
I really noticed that, I think it really started in the new millennium, I think in around 2000, with NBC coverage, I started to notice that a lot more, that they started to show it constantly, or they never took it off the screen. I think the underrated part of all of these television packages that we've been talking about the history of, the Fox Sports regional coverage. Because even though Fox Sports, I don't know how they outsource it, I don't know how they pay them, but you know, the local Fox Sports productions of these teams, that is a very vital part of what makes that television. Because now you have a highlight for every game. If there's a random awesome dunk that happens in a Minnesota Timberwolves game, then there's a clip of it because of the fact that we have regional coverage.
Well, that also happened in the 2000s, because I used to be, remember, some Fox Sports would be like, oh, we have all your home games, but we're not showing the away games.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, luckily I lived in Boston where they showed every game. I was like, yay.
That was CSN, though, right?
CSN bought them. They used to be Fox Sports.
Okay.
That was they had a trade. Like, CSN bought a few networks, Fox Sports got a couple.
And why in God's name did they take Tommy Heinsohn with them?
I love Tommy. You don't get it because you're not from here.
Do you love Place to Be Nation's own Sean Grandy?
Sure.
We've had him on some of our podcasts a couple times at Place to Be Nation.
But no, Tommy's just like everyone's old drunk uncle who just says whatever he feels like. If you grew up with it like I did, it's just beloved, and like all other broadcasts are sort of stale, where it's just, let's just give the, you know, A and B. Tommy was just like a fan watching the game. Yeah. Like, he had no analysis whatsoever.
I'll say this for the NBA. They were definitely ahead of their time with League Pass, because that started in 1995. You know, I don't remember when Sunday Ticket started coming, but I'm pretty sure it was in the late 90s with DirecTV. I'm pretty sure that League Pass came before it. And not only that, League Pass was sort of an offshoot of what NBA TV, which was originally called NBA.com TV. They were originally based out of Secaucus, New Jersey. And then they were bought out by Turner in 2008, and now their main studio is at the same places inside the NBA in Atlanta, Georgia. But their main program is Game Time, and I feel like Game Time was a bit of a precursor to the ever-so-popular NFL Red Zone. Do you feel the same way?
Well, they would zap in
and out of games. Oh, this is a close game. Let's
like
go see that.
ESPN Coast to Coast. It was just, let's show random things. And
yeah, but
I used to love NBA League Pass. I ordered that for like 3 or 4 years when I lived in New York and I couldn't see the Celtics games. It was just like, well, I'm not tired. Let's see what's on the West Coast. Sacramento's on. Let's watch Sacramento. It was always, you know, before this torrenting and, you know, all these streaming sites, and it was just a great, fun place to watch games, and just, I could watch whatever game I want. Oh, it's a commercial, let me go watch. It was great if you're just a fan of basketball, just the NBA in general.
Yeah, but now we're in the new millennium, and, you know, ESPN has now been having their rights, their television rights for the NBA for quite a long time, and now we have new words enter the Zeitgeist. We got, like, we have streaming content platform. So what do you think about this? I think YouTube was really the first one. They got bought out by Google later on. But YouTube was the first, you know, video site that really set the tone for big time business, big time entertainment capital. And I think for the NBA, they were the first pro sports league to truly embrace YouTube, because YouTube, as it was constituted with the short clips, the montages, the highlights, it was so perfectly suited for NBA basketball because of their business model.
I don't know if it was so much business model as they were different than everybody else. NFL is so secretive with their, oh, you can't show any highlights of us. you know, our stuff is our stuff. You don't
restricted rights, copyright.
Yeah, baseball is stuck, you know, 30 years ago, and, you know, we can't show anything. Hockey, you're not, you know, they've sort of shown they're not going to gain any new fans.
The interest isn't there. It just isn't.
It's not that the interest isn't there. Like, those who like it, like it. You know, when they took off the gear, nobody cared.
They did make big money on a just recent deal with Rogers Cable. So
that's Canada.
Yeah, it's growing.
Canada, you don't try to figure out hockey in Canada. You are hockey to Canada is like
worship.
It's huge. That's all it is. That is their sport. You're not going to get that down here, but it's just like, you know, hockey went out for a year. All the fans that were there, they all came back, but they didn't get new fans.
But NBA embraced it on the digital
NBA
streaming.
Embraced it. They embraced it because you could watch, you know, even let's look at now with Bruno Caboclo. All you have is just grainy footage of him practicing in some gym in Brazil. You could show the game is not told by a 5-second dunk that happened in the second quarter with 5 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm. You want to watch the whole game? Now, YouTube changed their rules. In the beginning, they could just have as long of a clip as they want. Then they forced it to where you had a maximum of 15 minutes. But now they've relaxed those rules in the most recent years where you can have an hour-long game. And it's so great because some people will upload them legally or illegally. I don't encourage them illegally, but if you do it, God bless you. But, you know, you'll find some of these playoff games, you know, from the 80s and the 90s, and they'll have the entire game. And it's just so awesome.
Yeah, and the NBA is not angry because that just drives
exactly. Any publicity is good publicity when it comes to having free content digital content available is a good thing. It's never a bad thing. And
it is all old content that's not hurting your bottom
archives.
Line today. Yes.
Yeah. You know, now if you're WWE and you're trying to monetize your archives, try to squeeze every penny out that you possibly can, that's different. I understand that. The NBA has become an enterprise where they don't have to do that to their fans. You know, they can put their content out in the open. Like, they don't have to say, hey, if you want to see this awesome LeBron dunk, you need to watch our mobile app. They don't do that. Like, if you want to watch, like, you could go on Twitter and you could probably figure out on your timeline the very moment a really awesome dunk happens because there's like 5 or 6 tweets about it, and you could probably see the video within a matter of seconds. You know, and it's awesome to have that connection to your fans, and I think that's missing. I think there's definitely a matter of social disconnect in terms of interactive between the NFL and its fans and Major League Baseball and its fans.
Yeah, because, you know, NFL, like I said, they're just so protective of their brand and their, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Baseball is just they don't understand anything. Baseball is just doing everything wrong.
Yeah, here's my theory, my very basic theory about the whole thing. In the NFL, it's about the teams. In Major League Baseball, it's about the game itself. In the NBA, it's about the stars. It's about the name on the back of the jersey, not the front. Even though from a team principle, it should be about the name on the front.
I would disagree. NFL is about it's once a week, every game sort of matters. You only have one day to look forward to this. Each game is huge. Baseball is still racked on tradition because they haven't really built up their stars right now. I'm not saying this because I could care less about baseball, but the Dodgers are like, oh, you need to check out our Cuban superstar. You're not really building much for me as the casual viewer.
The NBA has had a decent adjustment to their most recent approach to things is that because they have such a cavalcade of stars now, there's so many – I mean, we've talked about it before with the point guard rankings and other things. There's so many good players in the NBA right now. You can't just completely depend on those players. You need to at least create a system in which fans can at least accept and consume the NBA because of the brand, because you slap NBA on it.
And how do you do that? Through highlights. How do we know J.R. Smith can do it? Because we saw the clip of him on YouTube just draining threes unconscious at one game.
Yeah.
Gerald Green. People are going crazy because of his dunks. You get the clip to get the name of the player, and it gets you in the door.
Yeah, but what I mean by that is that, you know, for Major League Baseball, it's not about, hey, look at all these Hall of Fame players that are playing in Major League Baseball. It's about, hey, look at these players that are emerging in Major League Baseball that might eventually become Hall of Famers. And I think that's where I think the NBA is at. There's so many good players that, I mean, we talked about that with the next 15. We don't know which ones are going to be Hall of Fame players, but we damn sure have a lot of them right now. You know, and I think the NBA is in a really good place, and they're in an even better place after they got the deal done back in October because they signed a brand new contract. And I don't remember the length of the deal. It goes from 2016-17 until 2024 and 2025. But here's where it has a direct effect on the league, and we're going to finish this up, is that the salary cap is directly tied to the TV revenue. It always was. That's why it's so doggone important to a lot of these players and to a lot of these GMs, because the more money you have in the revenue stream, the more you can spend. The more you can spend, the more money players make. And the contract is right now, I think I had mentioned it earlier, at $930 million. In the 2016-17 season, beginning with that season, it balloons to $2.66 billion. By the time we get to the 2024-25 season, it'll be at $3.1 billion. That is triple what it is now, Adam. That is going to triple salaries.
It is, but we don't, you know, the thing is with the future, we don't know how it's going to go. It could either be the best thing or it could be the worst thing in the world. It could make all the teams now just have super bloated salaries where nobody cares and everybody's making $20 million.
Well, let me ask you this, and just we'll wrap it all up. Do you think it's a good thing that the television revenue having such a spike in its increase has such a prevalence on the climate of the league as a whole that it influences the players and where they go and what money is spent? Because I think that's a bit of a good thing, bad thing.
It could. We don't, again. You could say that because you have people like Chris Bosh who took less money to play with his friend. And then you have people like Al Jefferson who went to Charlotte because they gave him the most money.
And then you have guys like Chris Bosh who stayed in Miami because he could get that extra gear.
Yeah, so you don't know which way it's going to go. That's why I said it could be either really good or really bad. It's just I don't want to see, you know, you had – think back to like 10 years ago when you had – a Donald Foyle getting a $30 million contract and Brian Cardinal getting a mid-level max deal. Mm-hmm. I think if they just, you know, if I might have mentioned this previously, but if they just open the salary cap up and it's like, okay, now it was 50, now you could double it, you're going to have a lot of bad contracts. But if they sort of stagger it and go along slowly,
yeah,
as opposed to let the floodgates open.
Well, that's what this deal is doing. It's now, here's the thing. They were trying to make it out. They were trying to persuade the players, don't freak out about the increase in rights fees because it's not as drastic as you think. Because they're saying, well, it starts at $2 billion, but it eventually increases in slow increments to $3 billion. Yeah, but when your previous one was $900 million and then you go up to $2 billion, that's a big fat green check that you gotta sign. You know,
let's put it this way. The CBA ends what, 2017 or 2018?
It ends in 2016.
So after
right before that salary cap blows up.
They're gonna have a new CBA.
Oh,
they're not gonna,
sure.
There's not going to be a strike. They're not going to, with this much money on the table, they're not going to have a lockout. That would just be suicide for them.
That is what I've heard, that the TV executives, because of so much money being at stake, will not allow it.
Yeah, that's just going to be suicide, but they're going to redo stuff. As, you know, we're not, the NBA now, salary cap wise, money wise, as we know it, is not what we're going to see when this all starts kicking in. So that's why you can't really speculate too much.
Other new deals, details in the deal that we've noticed, we're not going to obviously see until 2017. But 12 more regular season games for Turner, that'll be on a new night. I had a kind of sense that they had that pocket of games for another network, like say a YouTube or Fox Sports 1, if they wanted to dip in, just so that they could make an extra like $300 million, but the Turner decided to buy in on that by paying a little bit more than they did before. You remember what I said about an NBA award show, kind of like NFL Honors? Well, guess what? We're going to get an NBA award show on Turner Television.
Why not? You're paying all that money. You should get some extra stuff out of it. I mean, you can only show.
The red carpet for these basketball players is going to be – that's going to be the best part.
Super plush, but – all I can say is, you know, let's just enjoy what we have now. This season has been completely sort of crazy with just the whirlwind of things that are happening that we haven't seen in years past with teams panicking and just really lots of drama this year.
We know drama. But that's going to be wrapping up this special. I hope people got a decent education or a little bit of, you know, stroking their beard about, you know, the thoughts about the NBA and their television history and what kind of impact it'll have on the league and how much of an impact it did have back then. Adam, do you have a favorite announcer?
I can't do Tommy Heinsohn and Mike Gorman, the longest.
That's horrible!
The longest duo of any professional sports team.
Oh, man, I love Marv. Marv is my guy. I've always loved Marv. You know, and I also love Steve Snapper Jones, when he absolutely wanted to choke Bill Walton when they were together. That was some fun stuff. But that's gonna be wrapping up this episode. I hope everybody enjoyed it. It seems like that Skype feed came out pretty clear in Finland there, Adam.
As you can tell, since you already blew the finals of college football will be coming up soon. we are taping this early.
Just like CBS, we're on tape delay.
This is, you know, today dropping on the 20th. I'm in Finland. I'm in Europe for 2 weeks because I'm getting married, so that's why I'm out there, and we're getting ahead. Next week you're going to have a nice guest host. We're not going to let you in on it, but it's going to be very entertaining. But
you know, Eric Bischoff's going to spoil all this and tell everybody what happened.
But yeah, that's why I'm on vacation. I'm out there. You know, I'm not going to go where it's actually colder. Yeah. Because I'm weird and northern like that, but yeah, I'm up literally in the Arctic Circle getting married with 2 hours of sunlight. So.
Well, your voice is with us in spirit, just like the spirits of St. Louis from the ABA days. But that's gonna do it for this episode. You got any salutations out there in Finland?
You know, again, everybody, thanks for listening. Check out placetobenation.com. There's tons of good articles and polls and lots of interesting stuff. There's always new stuff going on every week. There's a great bunch of writers. You know, Justin and the crew they've really grown this year to year.
Yeah, they're getting ready for that WrestleMania coming up in Santa Clara. So there's, you know, things are the ante is getting upped at Place to Be Nation as the wrestling fans are getting ready, just like the NBA is with all their trades and the trade deadline and the All-Star break, and things are getting heated. It's getting fun there, you know. All right, on behalf of Adam Murray from Finland, this is Andrew Reich. We'll see y'all again. Take care, guys.
Bye.